and welcome to Way Too Seriously, the podcast where we watch kids' movies and take them way too seriously. I'm Paul Moffat.
I'm Jan Moffat.
And this week we watched and we'll be talking about the 2012 movie Paranorman. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the making of this movie, Jan?
Paranorman was made in 2012. It's a 3D stop-motion animation by the studio Leica, distributed by Focus Features. Leica is, they make all claymation stop-motion animation movies that are beautiful to look at. Mm-hmm. It stars Anna Kendrick, Casey Affleck. Paranorman is played by Cody Smit-McPhee, who would go on to be Nightcrawler, if that's... directed by Sam Fell and Chris Butler. And story by Chris Butler as well. Do you want to tell us what it's about?
Sure. So Norman, who can see the dead, is an 11-year-old boy who lives in a New England town that has a history of Puritan witch burnings and is doing a play about the evil witch who cursed the 7 people who accused her. On the anniversary of her death, the witch rises and brings the 7 people who cursed her back from the dead to be zombies. Mm-hmm. Norman's uncle can also see the dead and gives Norman the task of preventing the dead from rising just before the uncle dies and passes on so that Norman can't ask him any questions about it. Mm-hmm. Norman and a band of misfit helpers drive around the city trying to find the place where the witch died so that they can read from the book and stop the zombies from rising. And they successfully do. How good is this movie, Jan?
Well, the animation studio, Leica, is named after the first dog who went into space.
It is.
Makes these stop motion animation movies. Coraline, this one, Paranorman, Box Trolls, and Kubo and the Two Strings. Those are the 4 they've made. Mm-hmm. They are always fantastic. Mm-hmm. And they have so much attention to detail. And I think we even said this as we were watching it, was because it's filmed, it's real objects that are being filmed, the composition of the shots are much more cinematic.
Yeah.
And to watch this as an adult, you really notice like the beauty of how it's made and how like complicated and painstaking it is to make this movie. And it pays off. I think like this movie and the other ones that they've made, maybe we'll talk about them in future episodes.
I would really like to do Kubo and the Two Strings one day. But what I said when we were watching it is it's beautifully animated, but it also is just really well directed, which is a thing mm-hmm. that I don't always notice about animated movies. As you said, the shot composition, and even apart from that's possible because of the stop motion, but it's not something to take for granted just because it's stop motion.
Yeah, absolutely.
The shot composition is really artistic and often idiosyncratic in this movie.
Yeah.
And it really is reminiscent of like horror movies.
Yeah, it definitely is. Yeah.
I think it's very well done in that way. I think the story is quite good. There's a turn a little more than halfway through the movie where you think that the witch... Like, I had forgotten, we've seen this movie before and I had forgotten what happens. Mm. And so about halfway through, 2/3 of the way through the movie, I was thinking, is this a movie where the Puritans were right and the witch really is an evil witch? And then no.
Nope, of
they,
course not.
They make a turn, of course it isn't. And they make a turn where it turns out the zombies aren't trying to kill anyone or eat anyone's brains because the curse was not intended to punish the townspeople, it was intended to punish the zombies. They get up and everyone attacks them because that's their punishment. And it turns out the curse wasn't so much a curse by a witch as the witch in the past was an 11-year-old girl who could talk to dead people just as Norman can.
Yeah.
And when she was violently killed, she's more like a poltergeist than a ghost.
Yeah,
so she
absolutely.
Can inadvertently mostly control the dead.
Wreak havoc.
And wreak havoc. And it's made text that as time has gone by, she has lost her humanity more and more. And what Norman needs to do is not vanquish the witch, but remind the little girl of who she is.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was I mean, we'll get to the way too seriously about it, but just in terms of plotting, I thought that turn was really well done because they establish early on that, like, one of the first things that happens is the zombie says, "You must stop." And I was like, oh, he's going to say, "You must stop us," or "You must stop the witch." Like,
yeah.
But then they really play that very well, where zombies are a threat, and then it turns out the mob is the threat, and the zombies are the ones being hurt. And Norman even says, like...
And it's not what you think. The curse isn't about the zombies hurting you. Yeah. It's about you hurting them. I figured it out.
That was a good twist. Yeah.
Yeah. This is the first time for Way Too Seriously we watched without our kids.
Yes.
Because Paranorman is kind of really scary.
Yes.
And I mean... our kids are kind of wusses when it comes to scary movies, although I think kind of as they should be. But so I'm not sure who Paranorman is aimed at. I guess it's aimed at kids who can handle this kind of scariness, or it's aimed at much older than a traditional animated movie might be, which is fine. And there's a lot. I mean, obviously, we think that adults should watch animated movies. And
yeah, you're right. I think it's... like, our 9-year-old might be able to handle it.
Yeah, yeah.
A 9-year-old could handle it, I think. Our 9-year-old probably could handle it. Our 6-year-old definitely couldn't.
Couldn't, yeah.
But in 3 years from now, when they are 12 and 9,
yeah,
a 12-year-old would still be into it, and a 9-year-old would be able to handle it.
Yeah, so I think it's kind of a preteen, preteen movie.
Because we say it's scary. It's not as scary as a straight horror movie would be.
Yes, yeah. It reminds me of the horror movies of my childhood, the childhood horror movies like Hocus Pocus or Goonies or things like that, where, like, frankly, those really scared me as a kid, but they were designed to be towards a certain age.
Yeah.
And our kids are a little bit young for that still. So
this movie, in terms of, you mentioned Hocus Pocus, just while we're talking about the quality of the movie... I said this right before we got on mic, but it's very entertaining and creative in a lot of ways. But in another sense, it is exactly Hocus Pocus meets The Sixth Sense.
Yeah.
A lot of the story is.
Yes. I mean, but it's also, maybe that's on purpose because it's playing on the
Yeah, and tropes. It takes Hocus Pocus and, like, but the witches aren't bad.
Mm-hmm.
But the witches is a witch, only one, and she isn't bad in the end.
Yeah. Okay, so highlights and lowlights. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I digressed for a second. But I think highlights are the, as you said, the twist of the story, that it is that the witch isn't bad after all, that it's about mob mentality and bullying. It's funny. It has a lot, despite being scary, it has a lot of funny moments. Mm-hmm. And as an adult, of course, you see those a little more, and you see the references that they're making to horror movies, and I quite liked that.
Mm-hmm.
What about you? Highlights?
I think, for me, the major highlight is just the visuals. I think it's the direction, the shot composition, and even the character design, the detail of the backgrounds, that's the main highlight for me.
Mm-hmm.
I like the story quite a lot also.
Yeah.
Lowlights?
Lowlights. I don't know. What are the lowlights?
I'll say this movie was better than I remembered it being, and I remembered it being pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the greatest movie in the world. Like, it's not like my top 10 of even the ones that we've done on this podcast, but it's good, and it's a fun movie. I think lowlights for me are... the pacing of the plot drags a bit at times.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's some Way Too Seriously parts that are low lights for me. So let's get into that.
What I was going to say is we're going to talk about enjoyment first.
Right.
But I was going to say the Way Too Seriously is where the low lights lie for me, except maybe the, as you said about pacing, and for me, the pacing moment is when he gives a speech to the mob. I quoted it because I think it's good, but I think it needed an editor's knife. That it's a big moment of tension. And this happens a lot in movies, right? A big moment of tension. And then some well-meaning character speaks to the crowd a speech about how they should be good and true. And they're all like, wow, you've changed our minds.
Yeah.
And in this movie, he does it and they don't listen. And then his sister says the same thing. And then they do listen. And we could talk about the seriously of that, but just in terms of the quality of the movie, we have two sincere, earnest speeches to a mob right back to back, and they're both longer than they need to be.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the
that's what I mean by dragging is that kind of thing. Yeah.
So apart from the quality, how much did you enjoy this movie?
Quite a lot.
Me too.
Yeah. I think that it's, you know, I can't wait till our kids are old enough to want to watch it, that it could be kind of, it could become a Halloween staple. And it's not specifically a Halloween movie, like they don't reference Halloween at all. But it definitely has that tone of Halloween.
Certainly.
And that's why we're releasing it so close to Halloween.
We are. I agree. I enjoyed it. As I said a second ago, I think I enjoyed it more than I expected to, and I expected to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
I watched it and was like, this is even better than I remember.
There you go.
So let's
take this way too seriously. You give me a look like I'm being crazy when I do that.
I'm pausing because I know that I'm going to want to add the echoes, so I don't want the echoes to step on what we say next. In my mind, I'm thinking of my future job as editing.
Yep.
So what is it? Where do you want to start with taking this movie way too seriously?
I think I want to start where we often do, which is there is a group. There's a ragtag group of kids. And how many women are in it? Once again, there is one.
So does this movie pass the Bechdel test?
I forgot to pay attention. I didn't notice if it did.
I think that when the class is rehearsing for their play, the precocious smart girl talks to the drama teacher about whether the depiction of a witch as ugly with a long nose is historically accurate.
Right.
Yeah. So they do, Pat. It does.
I thought that maybe the mother and the daughter also had a conversation.
I don't think they do.
You don't think they do?
They may have.
Yeah.
But I don't think they do.
Okay.
Certainly, there are several female characters, but they tend to be cordoned off from one another.
Yeah.
So there's the mother who mostly talks to the father.
Mm-hmm.
There's the sister who is part of the
main characters
who are going off solving the problem. There's the smart girl who I think we should talk some more about.
Yep.
I can't remember her name.
Yep.
The sister's name is Courtney.
Yeah.
The smart girl's, I can't remember her character's name, but she's worth talking about in a second. There's the drama teacher who interacts with the mob.
Mm-hmm. And there's the witch.
There's the police officer is
oh,
a woman.
Yes, police officer.
She maybe talks to the mother at some point. I don't know. I think maybe she only talks to the father.
Yeah, I feel like she only talks to the father.
So there's quite a few female actors.
Mm-hmm.
But the police officer certainly isn't named. The drama teacher, I don't know if she's named.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't tend to interact with each other.
Yep, that's true. It's the smart girl. It's the girl, this smart, precocious girl who is at school with them, in the play with them. And then when it comes, and it feels like she's friends with Neil, who is the little chubby kid. And it feels like she is almost part of their group. And then when it comes time to solve everything, she's not there. Even though they call her. And she gives valuable information. She's that standard horror movie trope where she's giving, you know, imparting the important information. But she doesn't get to be part of the group. And I really, really wish she had been.
They even lampshade it, but don't fix it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, they call her up and she says, so you're off having a supernatural adventure and you call me to do your homework for you?
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, I guess we do. And she's like, ah.
Norman, let me get this straight. You guys all go on this big supernatural adventure, and you're calling me in the middle of the night because you need someone to help you do your homework? Yeah.
Nags at them for a while because women are shrews.
Yeah.
And then does their homework for them and disappears from the plot again.
Yeah.
And like, you movie are aware that you are sidelining this character who has valuable things to contribute for no good reason.
Why couldn't she have met them at the town hall?
Yeah.
That would have been...
And then the next scene, like, she sends them to the town hall to find out information. They get to the town hall and they are bad researchers, so they can't find the thing.
Yeah.
And, like, she was just established as a good researcher. If she met them at the town hall and joined the team...
Yeah. I felt like that would have made the movie better.
Yeah.
Just to
agreed.
Have this extra...
And can we... I mean... She's, can we talk a sec about the fact that she's sidelined is a big problem, but can we talk about that trope of the smart, nerdy girl who doesn't actually get to be part of the team, or even sometimes does get to be part of the team, but she's the smart, nerdy girl.
Yeah, she never gets to be the hero.
She's Willow, she's Hermione.
Yep.
Even if she was part of the team, she would be Willow, Rosenberg, and Hermione Granger, who are both better than the protagonist, but aren't the protagonist.
Yeah, because, exactly.
And both explicitly, both of those characters, and I'm thinking especially of high school Willow.
Yeah.
Do their friends' homework for them.
Yeah.
That absolutely. Is a thing.
That is a thing.
Why do smart girls do the boys' homework for them? Can you talk to me about that?
So that the boys can keep up? Because, I don't know. It's terrible. It's because their smartness has to be diminished.
Mm-hmm.
It's because they have to earn every scrap of their intelligence, but the men, the boys in their life, don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
They can just rely on smarter people who have actually studied and developed their smartness. And
it's this
privilege. It's the privilege of the male characters to be able to rely on these smart female characters, smart, competent female characters.
That's why on our podcast, I like to ask you questions and then you answer them and I say, and then act like I thought of it.
Exactly. I'm doing all the homework here.
But it is. It's about privilege, and it's about they have to be extraordinary to earn their place, and the male characters don't. And it's, we talked about this in a previous episode. I can't even remember what movie we were talking about. We talked about not much being expected or demanded of the male characters.
Yes.
So Norman doesn't have to be particular. Norman has to be able to speak to dead people.
Yeah.
That is extraordinary.
Mm-hmm. It's something he's born with.
He doesn't have to be particularly intelligent, particularly hardworking, particularly insightful.
Yeah.
And the other people who are helping him on the way, Neil and his older brother, and the bully, Alvin, none of them are particularly competent or intelligent or useful.
Yeah.
Courtney isn't either.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is you have a woman on the team, a girl on the team, who is less than useless. She, I mean, and they're playing on these horror tropes on purpose.
Yes.
That Courtney is a shrieking blonde girl who is incompetent, but they don't subvert it at all, and that's, I don't like that. I think that's a problem.
Her moment is when she finally believes in her brother.
Yeah.
And even that, like, it's touching and heartwarming, but it also, what's the place for women is supporting men.
Yeah.
And their job is to support the men who are going to do the real work and get the real credit. Let's talk about the witch and bullying. Because in the crucial moment, she's all full of emotional distress and electrocuting things. And
he calls her a bully.
He says, "You're just a bully."
Mm-hmm.
They hurt me! So you hurt them back? I wanted everyone to see how rotten they were. You're just like them, Agatha!
No, I'm not!
You're a bully!
No, I'm not!
What is this movie saying about bullying? I feel like it's a major theme of this
movie. It is a major theme of this movie.
And I think it's actually doing a really good job with it.
Yeah. I feel like it's doing a good job in that it is showing that bullying is something you do, not someone you are.
Yeah.
And so when they first introduce, for example, Alvin, he is a bully. And as the movie goes, he gets more and more humanized to realize that he's just doing those things. He isn't a bully. And the witch is bullied by her, bullied and put on trial and killed by the Puritans, but she...
And let's just call it murdered.
Murdered, yes. Murdered by the Puritans. And she is, and she thinks of herself completely as a victim, but when she lashes out, she is being a bully. And when she recognizes that is when she breaks. Is that she recognizes that just because she's been bullied doesn't mean she can't also be a bully.
It is a, I think, tr- trite truism to connect fear and bullying, but I think this movie does a far better than average job of showing how that works and how that can be true. Because people say, like, oh, you're just bullying because you're scared, but they don't stop to think, scared of what and whom and why.
Yeah.
And this movie really does.
Yeah.
And it seeds that idea of it's okay to be scared if you don't let it change who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And then the reason that the Puritans kill her is because they're afraid of her. And they say, like, we were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That was wrong of us.
That was wrong of us, yeah.
And then she is scared but angry and loses who she is. And they bring that idea back again.
Mm-hmm.
And then I like to, I mean, so the way that she doesn't recognize that what she's doing is bullying because she doesn't recognize herself as someone who has power. So I can't be a bully because I'm not the one who's powerful.
Yeah.
But she also doesn't recognize herself as a bully because she doesn't recognize herself.
Yes.
Right? And it's, again, the ubiquitous theme of children's movies of who are you? But connecting it specifically to fear.
Yes, absolutely.
And how fear can
influence who you are.
Influence who you are. And I really like that they connect that to Neil.
Mm-hmm.
Neil, who seems like just the main character's doofy sidekick.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the first things he says is, people pick on me all the time and what are you going to do?
Like, yeah, there's always going to be bullies.
There's always going to be bullies. And he is the one who teaches Norman in the movie, you know, not to hold a grudge, not to be angry. And it's a little facile the way that he does it, like, because he's just like, well.
yeah.
But Norman then expresses that same thing in more nuance and depth, and the witch even more so.
Yeah.
So they take that idea and they flesh it out and develop it and apply it in, like, what does it actually mean to, and it's not about forgiveness. I think forgiveness is important, but this movie isn't about forgiveness.
No.
It's about fear and fear overriding who you are. And so the girl says, don't you want to make everyone else hurt when they hurt you? And Norman says, yeah, but what good would that do?
Yeah.
I think you got so scared you forgot who you are. And that, I mean, so, and then comes back again to, I think, Alvin, the bully, who joins them on their whole quest to, prevent the zombie uprising.
Yeah.
Can we stop for a second on Alvin before we move on? And I kind of like that he doesn't seem to learn much.
No, he doesn't really. He just comes to realize that that Norman is his friend.
Yeah. We kind of see him as human more fully.
Yeah.
But he isn't suddenly a great guy.
No, not at all.
He's still, like, frankly, he's still sexually harassing the sister in the last scenes.
Yeah.
No, maybe not the last scenes. He's still trying to, you know, bravado and act tough to pick up girls. In, I think, toxic, but also ways that the movie is mocking.
Yes, absolutely.
But we see, and we don't make text like he's picking on Norman because he has a hard home life, and that may all be true, or it may not be true, but we do see, like, he responds to fear with aggression, and he's afraid of things that are different, and why do people pick on you, Neil? Because I'm fat, and I sweat when I walk, and I have irritable bowel syndrome, and because he's different, and that what makes people afraid is not just the dead, but it's anything,
any kind of difference,
which brings us to, I think, the other big theme of the movie, or the subtext.
Mm-hmm.
In the text, what makes Norman different is that he can talk to dead people.
Yeah, he sees and talks to dead people.
What's the subtext?
But the subtext is anyone who is different, anyone who who deviates from the norm is some kind of, is ostracized and finds themselves isolated from others because of that difference. And it's a metaphor for a lot of things, but it can be a metaphor for queerness and for he's recognizing in himself a difference and a change and has to reconcile his relationships with those around him based on that.
Yeah, and I think that the movie at several points makes Norman a metaphor for homosexuality.
Yeah.
Like his father says, you know, his limp-wristed, fruity,
yeah,
hippy-dippy, right. connecting hippy-dippy. with dead people. But like,
yeah,
his father is coded, his father's relationship to him is coded as a hyper-masculine father who is rejecting his son for being gay.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And then father's relationship is the strongest, but there's other moments where he says, you know, just because I'm... when he says, I was born this way.
Right, yes.
Because I didn't ask to be born like this.
Yeah.
Is another, like, pretty direct connection of Norman to homosexuality.
Yeah. So, in that, we do have a gay character in this movie, and that is the burly brother of Neil, Mitch. The entire time, we have Courtney always trying to, like, hang off of him, and he's fairly, like, blasé towards her, and then, like, one of the last moments, he's like, yeah, my boyfriend would really like that, and so it's made very explicitly text that, oh, he's been gay all along, and that's why he hasn't cared about Courtney, and has been a bit of, when you know it beforehand, a bit of a gay stereotype in that, like, he's into, like, lifting and going to the gym and that kind of thing. But, which I think it's really good that they have this gay character on screen in this movie directed towards children. And this, even the Wikipedia article was like, this is the first time an out character has been in a children's animated movie, which I don't know if that's true or not. I guess it must be. But you don't know it until the last second.
So I think...
So, like, is that good? Is that bad? There's good things and bad things about that.
Yeah. I think there's one aspect is it's interesting that in a movie where there is a metaphorical subtext of homosexuality, there's also a non-metaphorical textual gay person.
Yep.
Who does not seem to be experiencing any of the confusion or ostracization that the metaphorically gay person is.
Yeah.
That's just interesting.
Yeah.
There's something about him turning out to be gay at the last moment. I'm going to make a case for why that's good.
Okay.
And that is, as you said, when you look back on him, you can see aspects of him that are a gay stereotype, but none of them are strong enough for him to be coded gay.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So he's a character who you get to know, you get to like to a certain degree. You think he's funny, you appreciate him as a character, and then the movie reframes him.
Yes.
And it's a way of forcing the audience to examine their own biases so that if you suddenly don't like the character, you're forced to confront the fact that nothing has changed about him at all except that he's suddenly labeled as gay.
Mm-hmm.
And if you still like him, you are given the opportunity, it's possibly assuming a level of bias in the audience, I think, to do it in this way, but it's giving you the opportunity to say, athletic jock can be a gay guy, and that's like, and I couldn't even tell in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think anyone is likely to make that consciously. But subconsciously, presenting a character who is just a character,
mm-hmm.
and then like, oh, by the way, he was gay the whole time, and there's actually some things about his behavior that are fit that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it forces you to either accept unconditionally or confront your own biases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I would argue there are some good aspects. All of what you said was good. But the negative aspects are the last minute thing and that it's played for laughs.
Yes.
That it's, the joke is on Courtney, mm-hmm. who has been, like, in love with him the whole movie and trying to get him to notice her and trying to get him to notice her. And then, oh, hey, I have a boyfriend. And she's like, so, and like, and the, you want to, you laugh at Courtney for being deflated by this and for it to be, a joke that maybe actually, now that I'm saying this all out loud, the joke is fully on Courtney. It's not on him. It's not on him at all. It's not funny that he's gay. It's funny that Courtney assumed that he was straight.
Yeah.
So actually, yeah, maybe in the end it is a good thing. I'm still questioning the last minute thing, but I do think that it is a positive representation in mm-hmm. a lot of ways.
Yeah, and like we've said, I mean, it's partly necessary for the joke, but like we've said about representation in other ways, the less plot necessary it is, the better the representation is.
Mm-hmm.
So they make the joke out of it, but it also, he could say, my girlfriend would like that, and the joke would essentially be the same joke.
Yeah.
So that is good because it means that he's not functioning as a token gay character. He is just functioning as a character who is gay.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a lot of funny about him that I think is good that they wait till the last minute to reveal that, because then things like his car falling apart and Courtney and him being like, oh, my baby, and Courtney thinking that's her, and then him going to the car and being like, oh, and then it falls to pieces.
Yeah.
It's like a lot of that is way more funny before you know it. And then it's, I don't know.
Why?
I don't know why. It's just the building up of he doesn't care about Courtney in a romantic way at all.
Right.
And then at the last minute you find out, oh, here's why.
If you're allowed to believe that he might care about Courtney romantically it makes those jokes a little funnier.
Yeah.
And also there's a, he's an interesting character in other ways because he's, again, this juxtaposition that we talked about in Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs of like muscular jock and, some things that don't fit with that stereotype.
Yeah.
And for the first 7/8 of the movie, that is, he is a caring and responsible older brother, despite being a meathead jock.
Yeah.
And then you find he's also gay, and does that also juxtapose unexpected stereotypes?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
I kind of like that rug being pulled out from under us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is there anything to talk about in terms of race in this movie? Everyone's pretty white except the cop.
Yeah, I think the cop is a bit of a stereotype. There is an extremely uncomfortable line in this movie.
There is.
That is said by the cop that is, it's said in 2012, and so, I don't know. I guess that excuses it ever so slightly, but
I don't think it excuses, but explains maybe.
She grabs a shotgun from the townsperson and says something along the lines of, you know, oh, it's the cop as is the job to be like overarmed and
no, she says, don't you be shooting at civilians. That's our job.
Yeah, exactly. That's our job. And like, oof.
I think it would be
watching that in 2017. That feels really gross, but I mean, at least it's coming out of the mouth of a character of color. But does that make it worse? I don't even know. It's just uncomfortable.
I think it is pretty. We both said to each other, "Like, too real."
Yeah, exactly. Too real.
I think it would be worse if it was coming out of a white man's mouth.
Yeah,
but only slightly.
Yeah,
I think it's also. Already pretty. I don't think that actually, I don't think that the movie is bad for saying this, but I think the movie is like inadvertently putting their finger on a really toxic aspect of American culture.
Yeah.
And police culture.
And police culture, yeah.
She's just there's a lot of things about her that are stereotype,
mm-hmm.
black woman stereotype.
Yeah.
But like,
and the what is even her name? The smart girl, smart, capable girl, is also a woman of color. And so there's all the things that we said before added on top of that, that she doesn't get to be with all the white protagonists as well. Yeah. So that's even another point in their detriment for that.
Yeah, I agree.
But I think overall, do you have anything else to specifically call out?
So.
Yeah. I think overall, though, these are all small things. I think overall, the seriousness of this movie holds up to a lot of scrutiny.
Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, I think that the sidelined smart girl is the biggest issue by far.
Yeah, I agree.
So, time for rating this movie.
Time for rating this movie.
How good is this movie?
Good.
I would say very good.
Very good? Is it seriously good?
It's seriously good.
It's seriously good.
It's not seriously very good, but yep. It's seriously good.
Seriously
it's very good.
Good
and seriously good.
Yep. And I look forward to someday sharing it with our kids.
Yes. If you want to talk to us about this movie or any of the movies that we have ever talked about on Way Too Seriously.
Or even tell us what your favorite Halloween movies are. We're going to do another Halloween-ish movie next week. And tell us if you rewatch or watch any Halloween movies around this time of year.
Yeah, absolutely. You can do that on Twitter at WTScast.
You can send us an email, waytooseriouslycast@gmail.com.
We have Facebook/WTScast. We're on Reddit, sort of. We're on, because no one talks to us there.
All the links will be in the show notes for those things. You can also support us on Patreon, patreon.com/clockworkscast, where you can kick us $1 a month or whatever you want to get some little extra bonus things from us.
And the more support we get on Patreon, the more podcasting we'll do. So if you our podcasts...
There can be more.
There could be more. We could do 5 a week instead of 2.
Nope. All right. So let's wrap this up. I've been Jan Moffat.
I've been Paul Moffat. Make sure you aren't normal.
Have a spooky week. Don't rise people from the dead.
The tagline of this movie, it's all fun and games until somebody raises the dead.
Let's hope that doesn't happen.
Okay.